That is robust.
Wow,
that's robust.
My ears are blaring.
Wow. They're low too. That's for you, Mallory.
Oh, I know this song.
You do?
Yeah.
Wow. There you go.
Wow.
That's for you, Mark Mallory.
Wow.
Wherever you are in your 200ZX, I love envisioning high school Mark Mallory.
You say this like
I know.
Once a month, probably.
It's just it brings a smile to my face. What can I tell you? All right, time to talk some college football with our buddy Matt Brown from Extra Points. Matt Brown is the king of college football media.
That's right.
And here he is, everyone, at Matt Brown EP on Twitter. What's up, buddy? How are you?
Man, I'm doing great. You know, I'm glad that more and more people are starting to recognize that I think I have now at least seized the crown of the most famous Matt Brown that writes about college football.
It's about damn time, my friend.
That's right. Other Matt Brown, meet me in the Thunderdome. I'm calling you out.
All right, speaking of that, we'll get into the Final Four and all that because that's exciting, but my Canes hired Mario Cristobal, and I don't know. Like, we talked about this a while back, and you know, you think I'm crazy because I want Lane Kiffin, and regardless if it's Lane or not, I don't know. This is more of the same to me, and he's okay at Oregon. I don't think they're really in danger of really, you know, getting to where Miami thinks it can go. And to me, like, they need a guy that can, like, single-handedly lift the program with his personality and everything else to get back to where it was. Because I think for Miami fans, that's, like, what they want. That's what we want. We don't want to be all right. We don't want to be, like, a good ACC team. We want to be back to where we were. And I don't know. I was underwhelmed and a little disappointed. And they gave him $85 million too on top of it. So, I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'm a little surprised to hear you say this, actually. Because to me, what was very different about this coaching search versus the last couple of coaching searches was that Miami has steadfastly and absolutely conclusively stated, we are going to spend money like a big boy program, which has honestly not really been the case for Miami over the last 20 years. And I'm talking not just about spending money on your head coach salary. They have been willing to do that. But about spending Ohio State, Clemson, Oklahoma money on your assistant pool, on your recruiting infrastructure, and for the rest of your department. Like, the biggest deal here to me isn't so much that you hired Cristobal. We can talk about Cristobal's pluses and minuses. It's that they follow that up with hiring Dan Radakovich, who is one of the probably five or six best renowned athletic directors in the country. And they doubled his salary, so he's going to be one of the most, if not the highest paid ADs in the country, somebody who was a finalist for the ACC commissioner gig, somebody who could conceivably become a university president down the line if he wanted to, and went out and grabbed him. And that was, I think, especially noteworthy because everything I had heard about this search, 2 weeks ago, was that it was a complete mess. Like, the exact term I can't use on the radio, right? I had been hearing that they were going to hire, like, Vinny Testaverde, or that they were going to go try to bring in some kind of flunky, and that there was a big push and pull between the new money in Miami and the university, like the alumni that are pushing for things, and then the academic side, and they kind of coalesced here. You know, whether any one coach will succeed or not, who knows? Like, anybody who's tenured with an A-plus hire, blah blah blah, like they're full of crap. Like, it's unknowable. But has Miami indicated through this process that they are willing to do things differently than they have? I think that's true.
Matt, staying in the coaching ranks real quick, Oklahoma bringing back Brent Venables. Of course, he was there forever as a defensive coordinator before he went to Clemson. Just wanted to get your thoughts on that, and also just kind of the things that stood out to me on that was that he got one of the richest contracts ever for being a first-year head coach. Just wanted to get your thoughts on that little part of it as well.
Yeah, the way we're seeing things right now is the coaching salary market is completely broken. It is not tied to experience. It's not really tied to performance. And there's no meaningful mechanism to bring it back down. The new going rate for a above average P5 job is going to be like $6.5 million a year. And the upper bound of those salaries is going to be $11-12 million a year. And it's going to increase by 20% like every 2 years, unless there's congressional action. Whether Venables will be successful, I think that his fan base is going to love it. He's going to try and play a kind of football that Oklahoma has not really played, I think, over the last several years, which is more smash mouthy. Like, Oklahoma's been a very good football team, but with a couple of exceptions, particularly along the offensive line, they've been a little bit of a finesse team. And you can't really be that kind of team if you're in the SEC, where the median talent level is going to be very different than where it was in the Big 12. So bringing in somebody with that kind of background makes sense. We'll see if he knows how to effectively manage a program. He's definitely had opportunities from several other major programs to do so, and he's turned them down. So that this was the job to move him, it says something, I think.
All right, Matt, look at some of these games that we saw this past weekend, and Alabama really taking it to Georgia. It took a while, but it ended up being a pretty convincing win. And this is Georgia's team that defensively, I don't think they've given up I think 17 or something was the high number they've given up all year. But I think we always wondered offensively, are they going to be good enough? Is their quarterback good enough? And we're still waiting on Georgia a little bit, right? So what did you think that moment meant? I mean, this is the year Georgia was undefeated, no more team in the country, this incredible defense, and they kind of got their asses handed to them a little bit by Alabama, which has been obviously – that's been a very abusive relationship the last few years. So what do you think that means for Georgia in this in their quest?
I think that the biggest development from that game that I saw was that Alabama's offensive line went from a liability to an absolute strength. I don't think there was any way that anybody who watched those two teams play 10 weeks beforehand would have confidence that Alabama would not only be able to pass protect, but to move asses up and down the field. And that's exactly what they did. And that's how Bryce Young had enough protection to attack downfield, where Georgia's secondary is good, but they haven't faced anything close to what they saw against in Alabama. And the key was being able to neutralize that pass rush. If Alabama's offensive line is now playing like that, they're the favorite in that 14 field. But all four of these teams, and this is what I think is interesting in this field relative to maybe the last five or six, is that I don't think there's an overwhelming favorite. All four of these teams have some very significant strengths and some pretty noticeable weaknesses that, where I think any of these four could potentially lose by 15 points in the first game, and they could potentially win both games. And that includes Cincinnati, if they're able to kind of drag everybody else down into the mud. Before, if you had asked me 3 weeks ago, I would have said Georgia's the overwhelming favorite. This now, I'm definitely not so sure. And I understand the anxiety if you're a Bulldogs fan, because if you couldn't get it done this year, it's never going to line up as easy on paper as it did this year. Especially if you can't get it done because of your offense, that's going to bring some uncomfortable conversations in Athens.
Staying on last Saturday real quick, it was an awesome day of college football conference championships. Of course, Baylor knocking off Oklahoma State, Cincinnati winning the conference championship over Houston. Wanted to ask you about the Baylor-Oklahoma State game. Just what were your thoughts on that game and kind of Baylor? It seemed like they were the better team the whole game over Oklahoma State, who had a opportunity to get to the Final Four here. Just what were your thoughts on how that game went down?
Yeah, I mean, that's about as college football as it gets, right? Where you have some like fifth-year senior who started off as a preferred walk-on, who played his way into the rotation, making a stop with 18 inches separating, his team from a conference championship to, falling out of the top 15. It was a really close game. I think you're right. Baylor probably, if this was soccer, you would have said that Baylor led the run of play. I think Baylor was the better team throughout most of the game. They had a couple of really big mistakes, especially inopportune moments, especially with the decision to go for like fourth down, like inside their own 35, I think, and gave Oklahoma State a short field.
Yeah.
But they were better. And they're looking like right now they're about to back up the Brinks trucks on Dave Aranda, who really loves being in Waco, had an opportunity, like a meaningful opportunity here to go like coach at USC, coach us at a much bigger place. They're going to pay him $7 million and he's going to be, and Baylor right now is looking like maybe the best team set up moving forward in the new Big 12. Like we will be seeing a lot of Baylor in conference championship games, I think, in the near future.
Matt, just to go back to the Georgia situation, because I love these things, how they evolve in college football. And, you know, the bar of success is so high, right? And you know, there aren't very many teams that are actually in this conversation year in, year out. But, you know, like you said, you might have some uncomfortable conversations in Athens. You know, what is the fallout if Michigan beats them? I mean, do you think it's like this is like a – like how loud does it get? What is the aftermath of that?
I mean, they're not going to fire Kirby Smart if they lose to Michigan. But, I mean, one, there's I think you may see some cracks in this kind of Georgia juggernaut. And we're already seeing that right now because there's a real – you know, there's some confusion. But, you know, their defensive coordinator, Lanning, is a significant candidate for the Oregon head coaching job. Maybe he ends up getting it. Maybe he doesn't. But if he doesn't, he, you know, this is going to be one of the number one guys on boards for the next cycle. Which I think will also be pretty robust, as it were, right? And eventually, it will become more challenging to secure as many five-star offensive recruits if you've demonstrated now that your offense can't put them in a position to be really successful. If you bring in a five-star guy from USC, I know he's had some health issues, but he's healthy now, and he can't beat out a walk-on, and you're not ready to play any of your younger guys in that position, and you're willing to kind of handicap your offense a little bit that way, that says something. Now, if Michigan beats Georgia, is Georgia going to go 8-4 the next year? No, I don't think so. I mean, they're still dropping bags. They're still recruiting to win. They've still got the top to bottom, probably the most talented roster in college football, and next year maybe they'll be third in that category. But that is going to be a talking point. And it's one of the things, like, you know, kind of dovetailing to Michigan here for a second. One of the things that's really difficult for coaches and for athletes is when, you know, you get your butt handed to you again and again and again by the same program. And then when you're playing, even if you're the better team, it gets in your head. And you can find a way to lose that game. We saw this. I think Michigan kind of lost the Ohio State game in the first quarter, a couple of these past years, because you're just thinking, well, here we go again. We saw this with Nebraska imploding in every Big Ten game they played this entire season, even though they were the better team than probably most of them. And we're seeing it, I think, with Georgia and Alabama. And it's going to take just a Herculean effort to get those ghosts out of there, because it's a big issue.
Matt, obviously we've had Notre Dame in the past play for a national title, but we finally have Cincinnati, a non-Power 5 conference team, in this Final Four. It seems like they're going to pay Luke Fickell here, but just what do you think the atmosphere is at Cincinnati right now, and just how awesome is it for college football in general that we now have a non-Power 5 team that finally got into the Final Four here?
They're absolutely ecstatic. And you know, Fickell was somebody that was really popular with that community and that school even before they hit this. They are in a position, I think, to really sustain success for a while. You're heading into the Big 12 in a year or two here, where you're going to be a top four recruiting program. You've got a great infrastructure. You've got a great stadium. You have a great recruiting territory. And now that Notre Dame has made a head coaching change, there's realistically only one or two jobs I think Luke Fickell would ever leave for. And one of them is Ohio State. You know, you might be able to get him at Penn State if James Franklin ever leaves, but James Franklin just signed an extension. So you are now in a rare position where not only did you get every single possible break to finally get into the Final Four, to go back to your earlier point, had Oklahoma State won that Big 12 championship game, I also think they jumped Cincinnati. So they, you know, that wasn't really something that can be replicated. But now you have a great shot of holding on to your hotshot coach. You have a good shot of following the TCU blueprint of keeping your guy for 21 years unless Ryan Day takes the Bears job or something. So they should feel very good, and I also think that they should feel good about their chances against Alabama. Desmond Ridder is not somebody who he's not going to Colt Brennan. He's not going to throw the ball 50 times a game and really carry Cincinnati by himself, but Cincinnati's secondary, I think, can hang with Alabama's wide receivers. And Alabama's offense is a little bit one-dimensional. They're a little bit banged up outside of Jameson Williams. Alabama's clearly more talented. And Cincinnati is going to struggle to score, I think, against Alabama. They're probably going to need to get some short fields. They're probably going to need to limit possessions and get some kind of blown lead to go their way. but I really don't think they're going to get blown out. Like, they are a team that is built to hang around.
You know, man, talking about Oklahoma, a few weeks ago I asked if, maybe Lincoln Riley kind of, sees the very, very beginning of maybe that thing changing a little bit. And I think it's interesting looking at, like, Texas and Oklahoma going to the SEC and what that means for them. And obviously we expect the playoff field to get bigger. So, but it's going to be tough. Right? It's going to be a tough road with Oklahoma or Texas in the SEC to consistently be one of those teams. And you're starting to see maybe the thing waning a little bit in Oklahoma. And we've seen what's happened to Texas over the last, 6-8 years. What do you think Oklahoma's, future is? Do you think they're more likely to struggle like Texas has? Or do you think they can keep their program where it's been, the last, 7-8 years, whatever it's been?
I mean, the last 7-8 years, they've won the Big 12 title like every single year. And they're averaging like 10 wins a season. And almost nobody outside of Alabama averages that in the SEC. So it's, I think, reasonable to assume if Oklahoma joins in 2023 or 2025 or whenever that happens, yeah, they're going to lose more football games. You're going to have a little bit of an advantage right when you come in just because people aren't going to have film on you. You know, Missouri was able to be successful surprisingly so very quickly. But, depending on how the divisions shake out, you're going to be playing against – 6 teams that have comparable talent to you, which has never been the case for Oklahoma historically. They've always been the big fish beating up on the Kansas States of the world throughout their last 100 years of football. I mean, I don't think that they're going to be like 7-5 forever. They've got a ton of money. They have been, outside of Ohio State, the most recession-proof program in college football over the last 50 years. It's very, very rare for them to be bad. And so I would expect them to fare better than Texas because Texas has been consistently good like once in 40 years. Like we talked about this a couple of times before. The problem is that Texas go on the floorboards, man. That's not a coach issue. That's not an athletic director issue. That is a booster and regent and like political culture problem. That's not going to be fixed by paying, Quinn Ewers $4 million to come in there and go 8-4. I would definitely like Oklahoma's chances to do better, but you are right. It's going to be a lot easier to win 10 games at USC than it is at Oklahoma in a couple of years.
Well, Matt, we always appreciate your time, my friend. Thank you so much. Oh, I have some news for you too, by the way.
Great. Yeah. So, I was surprised we didn't talk about Maine.
Well, that's where I'm going. Our head coach, this is embarrassing, but our head coach left to be the OC at UConn.
Yeah.
So
that's right. So did you hire a new person?
We did.
Or am I thinking of New Hampshire? Is there someone who's like my age?
Jordan Stevens. Yeah. So he's an ex-player at Maine.
He was at Yale.
He was the Yale's OC and associate head coach the last few years. And he's coming in to be the head coach of the Black Bears. So a new era.
I did see that. And honestly, I think that was a great hire for UConn, who's going to really need somebody that has some Northeast ties and who knows how to get the most out of developing quarterbacks, given the rest of that staff. I was a little surprised they were able to get that pull, which is kind of a funny thing to say.
Well, Matt, we always enjoy you and your time. Anything to report with Extra Points?
Yeah, I got some cool stuff happening. So I was in Vegas these past couple of days for this big athletic director Palooza meeting. I've got some I should have a little bit more mid-major conference realignment news to break at the late next week. We're going to find out what the Missouri Valley Conference is doing very soon. I've got some information here about the NCAA looking into name, image, and likeness deals at Miami and BYU. Nice. And I got another story for Miami that you might be interested in, because the real reason why Miami was able to pay all that money for Crystal Ball, right?
What's that, Uncle Lou?
It's not Uncle Lou, man. It's the hospital.
Oh.
Hospital made $400 million.
All right.
And this is the secret piggy bank now for a couple of these schools. So I'm going to write about following that money and understanding how that stuff's working. You can find all of that at extrapointsmb.com.
Matt, it's awesome stuff as always, my friend. Thank you.
Yeah, you bet, brother. I'll talk to y'all later.
Enjoy your weekend. Matt Brown, everybody, the undisputed king of college football media, at Matt Brown EP on Twitter.
Miami's paying their football coach
$85 million, dude.
With money made from their university hospital.
Yeah.
Is that normal?
Cash cow.
Yes, sir.
He said that that's going on in a few places. Yeah, that's the new.
It seems wrong.
What do you mean?
Does it not? whatever. It's college football. Whatever. Look, as you say, you gotta look past all the grossness, and I'll do that again. I'll do that again.
Yeah, it's just
I'll do it again.
I draw the line to pedophilia.
Yep.
Yeah. So
fair enough.
But there's a wide range under that. We gotta take a break.
Norway Savings Asset Management Group, offering personalized retirement and investment management.